You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. She began as a student at the University of Michigan, where she was the first female sports editor in the history of the Michigan Daily. Robin Wright has gone on to become a widely known and honored foreign affairs analyst, journalist, and author. Her books include Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World, Dreams and Shadows, The Future of the Middle East, Sacred Rage, The Wrath of Militant Islam, and The Last Great Revolution, Turmoil and Transformation in Iran. This coming Thursday, Robin Wright returns to Ann Arbor to give the Margaret Waterman Alumni Lecture. And Robin Wright is here with us now. Welcome, Robin, to Stateside.
Go Blue. It's great to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Robin, as we have seen during this presidential campaign season, there is so much fear, there's alarm among many Americans when it comes to the Middle East. Yet, as you talk to people here, Robin, how much do people really know and understand about the Middle East, the war in Syria, about ISIS?
Well, the Middle East is not only the most volatile area of the world, it's also the most complicated. It has a host of religions. It is, of course, a region that dates back to all the Abrahamic faiths, and everyone wants a claim to part of its land and part of its history and also part of its future. It's particularly controversial right now because you have a number of different trends playing out. There's the Arab-Israeli conflict, which dates back more than a half century. There's the issue of from the Arab Spring in 2011 of Arabs trying to oust autocrats and create political alternatives. And then, of course, you have the biggest national security threat and most complicated threat to the United States right now, and that's the war against the Islamic State, which is a extremist movement that has now absorbed about a third of Iraq and a third of Syria and redrawn the Middle East borders. And those three conflicts are actually the simple version.
It's very complicated, and that I'm sure increases the misunderstanding, the conflation, and the confusion among people. Robin, you just got back from the Middle East, and here we are about to choose our next president. What do you think that next president's role should be in the Middle East?
Well, the challenges in the Middle East for any president, and every president since the end of World War II has faced the challenges there, is really to figure out a way to balance American values of democracy and freedom and inclusion and women's rights and minority rights with issues of stability. And it's always been the great challenge for many American presidents. Stability has been the preference, in part because of America's dependence on oil. That's, of course, beginning to change because of America's growing independence for energy resources. But, you know, the challenge is trying to figure out a way that those who are insecure about their futures, who feel marginalized or excluded, can feel that they are part of the solution. You know, there are no real military solutions. You can isolate ISIS. You can isolate or try to contain extremists or defeat them. But that, at the end of the day, doesn't kill the ideas that have fueled a lot of these movements. And so the problem is, how do you help people in the region create their own alternatives? We tried after the war in Iraq to come up with solutions for the Iraqi people, and it didn't work. It will probably be judged historically as the greatest mistake in U.S. foreign policy. The question is, what does it take to find solutions that will stabilize the region, that will make people feel politically, socially, and economically included, that their interests and their survival is guaranteed? And you think we're afraid. People who live in the region feel just as afraid at a lot of different levels, and it's overcoming that fear. And after so many decades of conflict, the solution, the future, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fast.
President Obama has certainly taken heat for the way he's handled the Syrian conflict. Earlier this year, we saw 51 State Department diplomats openly criticize the Obama policy in Syria, and they're urging military strikes against the regime of President al-Assad. In your view, is there something or are there things the Obama administration could have or should have done?
There are no appealing options in Syria. They're all bad options. And the question is, which is the least bad? The danger for greater intervention, whether it was creating no-fly zones or providing more weaponry for rebels on the ground was what Colin Powell called the pottery barn rule. That is, once you break it or once you're involved, you're responsible for the outcome. And we saw what happened in Iraq. We've seen what's happened in Afghanistan. Nothing happens quickly. Solutions aren't easy. And people often resent the United States for trying to impose solutions on them. So the idea of there being an American military option for the war was never really viable.
And yet we have a candidate saying that if he was elected, he would, quote, bomb the hell out of ISIS.
I'm not going to get political. I don't get involved in American politics. I live in Washington, D.C., and frankly, a pox on all their houses. You know, the question is, what are the realistic options in the future? And if it hadn't been for Iraq, we might have had more options in Syria. But the fact is, the whole Middle East is now going through a period where we don't even know whether the states that were defined a century ago by France and Britain will actually be able to be sustained, whether we may see at the end of the end of this process a redrawing of the Middle East map. It's quite possible. It's clear that there has been long-standing resentment, that there are people who, not just in the last 5 years or 10 years, but for, you know, since the beginning of this process, have felt that whether it's the outside world or the local governments, have not treated them fairly. And so these are, you know, big, big issues. We tend to look at the day-to-day headlines and say, what can we do about Aleppo? What can we do about getting ISIS out of Iraq? These are the immediate problems. The bigger issues are really the ones we're going to eventually have to deal with. And those ultimately are not just military. Even though we probably will be able at some point to push ISIS, the Islamic State, out of most of its territory, the question is, what happens to the idea, the alienation that fueled it? And those are the bigger things that will help prevent ISIS from coming back in another form. Remember, Al-Qaeda was, in many ways, a starting point for this process. Al-Qaeda then grew in franchises across the region. One of those was in Iraq. That group then morphed into the Islamic State. And what we have to try to prevent is this phenomena for morphing into 3.0.
And I'm interested in your thoughts as we see the refugee crisis, we see the heartbreaking images of people fleeing the conflict. Well, knowing what you do, Robin, about the war in Syria and the refugees fleeing that war, what do you say to people here in the States, here in Michigan, like our governor, who wants to slow down welcoming refugees for fear that they pose a security risk?
The United States has the toughest immigration system in the world when it comes to vetting, particularly from people in that region, for the very reasons that the public fears, that there will be some seepage, that among the refugees there will be some extremists. It's very hard, however, to get a visa to the United States, and the United States has been much more limited in the percentage of refugees it takes. The vast majority of these people are innocent civilians who have fled a conflict. They don't have jobs. More than 60% of the country is now dependent on international aid just to get a daily meal. Almost 5 million people have left the country altogether, this in a population of only about 20 million. You have over half the population that has fled internally in some form. So we're talking about the greatest humanitarian disaster since World War II. And this is a great country. I'm kind of ashamed as an American that we haven't been more generous in bringing the women, the children particularly, the elderly, the injured, to the United States and giving them a sense of hope and showing how generous we are and what a role model we are as a melting pot for the world.
Foreign Affairs journalist, analyst, author Robin Wright will be back home in Ann Arbor to give the October 13th Margaret Waterman Alumni Lecture. It's a town hall from 11:30 to 1:30 at the Michigan Union Ballroom. What kind of questions, Robin, are you looking forward to getting from your audience?
I'll take any question, and I'm thrilled about being back in Ann Arbor.
Robin, thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you.